This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
What's up, Goreheads, and welcome to another episode of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. And sitting to my left is my beautiful wife, Nancy. She's everybody's favorite co-host. Say hello, Nancy.
Hello, Nancy.
I should expect it by now. Before we get started, we would like to, first of all, thank our ongoing patron, Kark, for being our first patron. And we would also like to announce that we now have a second patron. Brooke, from a podcast on Elm Street and a podcast on Fury Road, has become a patron of the Extreme Horror Replay Podcast. And of course, we thank him very, very much for his patronage and his undying faithfulness to our little show. We have a good episode for you today. This is the last of Nancy's winning movie picks from, what, 4 or 5 episodes ago. She won the quiz show. She earned her right to pick 5 movies, and this is the last pick for her. Before we get to that, we're going to do our Would You Rather. Mm-hmm. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. And I came up with this one. Mine are never as good as Nancy's, but okay. Would you rather spend 3 months in a location, doesn't necessarily matter where, 3 months in a location, a haunted location, knowing that the spirits or entities or whatever are out to kill you, or spend a week in a house with 10 people you don't like that are all trying to interact with you?
Well, being the reclusive person that I am tempted to say the haunted house. However, I think that I would fear getting killed a little bit more than having to interact with people.
Okay. See, I thought you, I definitely thought you would have gone with the cabin.
Really?
Or whatever location, but the hauntings.
Well, I would have gone right along with it until you said that they were out to kill me. And there's no, I mean, you can't out kill a ghost.
Well, you can't out kill a ghost. It doesn't necessarily say that they, I mean, obviously they're trying to kill you. Doesn't mean they may, doesn't mean they'll
but that,
succeed.
That implies that there's some sort of torture that they're inflicting on you.
Okay. So you'd rather spend a week with 10 people that you don't like that are all trying to interact with you?
Yes.
All right. Okay. See, I would much rather go for the hauntings.
Well, remember, we have the holidays coming up. We're going to be around a lot of people that want to interact.
We love you, family. Yeah, so
maybe we should revisit this after.
Well, yeah, holidays. I mean, in that, yeah. Yeah, okay, put a check next to that box. We'll come back to that one in a couple months. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, we'll come back to that. But for temporarily, I'm picking the haunting for 3 months. I'll deal with them. I'll try and outrun
you
them.
Are not gonna give me a break.
Well, I'm not saying I'm smart enough to outsmart ghosts.
No, I'm not saying that you're smart enough either. I'm just saying that we have been ghost hunting. We've done it several times.
Right.
We've always done the provocation, anything that we can do to get the spirits to, you know, communicate with us.
Yeah.
And we have never been successful doing that.
Right.
But in your scenario, they're definite ghosts and they're definitely wanting to kill you. You'd be shitting your pants. You would be chicken shit. You would, like, not in any way be able to continue, even after the first spook that got you.
I'm still going for the ghost. Well, you know, I mean, if they do end up killing me, then I don't have to deal with the 10 people ever that I don't like that are all trying to interact with me.
Okay, but let's say the ghost tried to kill you and it became big news and you were a big media frenzy, and then you'd get 10 plus people trying to interact with you about your story.
Yeah, but if they killed me, it doesn't matter.
No, they just attempted to kill you.
Well, there's no rule that says that they would know that I was, you know what I mean?
They wouldn't know that you were...
Well, it's not like I would get out of wherever I was at. Say it's a cabin or, okay, spoiler alert, the Overlook Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing The Shining. So say it's the Overlook Hotel. It's not like I'm going to get out and I'm going to go and tell the first person that I meet, like, hey, I was almost killed by these ghosts or entities or spirits or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Is it the same circumstances that the Torrances are there? Because I would think that after everything that happens, by the end of the movie, she escapes with, spoiler alert, she escapes with Danny. And I would think that once news got out that her husband went crazy and tried to attack them and kill them, that they would be very much intruded upon by the media.
Okay. But to your point, it did happen to the previous caretaker, and Jack had never heard about it. It was the hotel manager that had to tell him that the guy had gone nuts.
Okay, but the previous guy that had gone nuts killed his wife and his daughters.
Right. And then
there was nobody to rat on him.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
So Wendy and Danny escaped.
All right. I would keep it to myself. I'm going for the ghost. I'm going for the 3 months.
Okay. All right.
Leave me be. All right. Yes. So, okay. We have both chosen our, all right. Yeah. Okay. Again, obviously the movie that we have picked, Nancy picked, I should say, is The Shining from 1980. It scores an 8.4 on IMDb, a 4.3 on Letterboxd. And I will say that before watching it, we've watched it twice in the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I was not as big a fan prior to these two watches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've hated it. You've always hated it.
Now that we have started to really look into it and dissect it and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
it's really not a bad movie.
I knew you'd come around.
So, yeah, I think I like it after these two watches because we literally just got done watching it again.
And it is one of those movies where you can probably find a new...
Well, I mean, just in this watching, we came up with 3 or 4 new observances.
Things that we hadn't noticed
in
our previous watches.
So, yeah, I think I'm coming around on this one a little bit. And I think if we watched it again, I mean, I would hesitate to watch it immediately or, you know, within the next 2 weeks. But I think if we watched it again, even within a year, we'd probably find or expand on the things that we come up with just this time.
And this was a conversation that we just had. A person's taste in movies.
Oh, yeah.
It fluctuates.
Oh, to your point, I'm going to... Kark. I know you were expecting Nancy to berate the movie The Sadness from your last episode, the one that we were on. And when we got done, she was explaining to me that you watch a movie, and I think you use the logic of like hearing a song.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a song and you're like, that's really not that good. But then you listen to it again and you listen to it again and it grows on you and you catch more like catchy riffs and, you know, like the chorus hits you a little bit differently and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So to your point and to Kark and Brooke, I know you were expecting her to berate the movie, The Sadness, a little bit more than she did. But after she had watched it for us, she wasn't a big fan. But then we watched it again and we watched it again. And it's grown up.
And then we broke it down and a lot of good points were made about things that I hadn't considered the first time I watched it. So,
well, aside from Brooke liking Molly, which you did not like, especially her bangs, I think Brooke made a lot of points that like struck you differently and you're like, oh yeah, you know, mm-hmm. you're right. Yeah. So,
well, yeah. I mean, the first time you watch it, you just think it's like, it's a bloodbath and they're just going for gore and that's it. You don't think that there's a story or there's, you know, a plot, a definite, like, intelligent plot line to it.
Right.
So, and then you pretty much reinforced this new revelation of yours on seeing movies by listening to Chris Stapleton and then deciding that you are now a huge fan of somebody that sings country music.
I have never been a fan of country. I will entertain it if Nancy puts it on in the car. I will suffer through it. But she played Tennessee Whiskey for me. Then we just started like digging into his discography, the song tracks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we started listening to his music, some of his other songs and stuff. And I hate to admit it, but I cried to some of them because they just kind of hit. So Chris Stapleton, I'm a new, I guess you could say I'm a country convert.
And he's 45. Ben is 45. So that's 45 years it took for him to accept country music as a valid music genre.
Yeah. I mean, I always knew it was a valid music genre.
You just never knew why.
It was never in my wheelhouse. So, but yeah, I am quite surprised that his music, it hits. It's got meaning,
mm-hmm. You know. It resonates. And all you really need is one point in a song or a movie or a show.
Yeah.
Even a commercial, some piece of art. All it takes is one thing to resonate with you, and it'll stick with you.
It does. It does. Well, there's that Shinedown song.
Yeah.
Dysfunctional
yeah.
You.
Yeah.
I bawled like a baby in that.
That we were talking about songs and videos that just made us like complete morons when it came to trying to keep our composure.
Blathering idiots.
A couple of moody, sad, emotional dorks.
That was us last week. So, okay, we are going to dig into this movie. Now, there's not really a lot that can be said about this movie that probably hasn't been said before. We'd like to think that we have a couple observances that, you know, we kind of noticed and things that maybe we're bringing to the table that's a little bit different than everybody else. So we're going to take it away. Obviously, the movie stars the Joker as Jack Torrance. It also stars Olive Oil as Wendy Torrance and Danny something as Danny Torrance.
I don't think he did any acting after this.
I don't
this
think
movie.
He did anything else after mm-hmm. this. And
I know he does. He does horror movie conventions and stuff like that. I mean, makes appearances now, doesn't he?
I don't know.
I think I heard that he did. I could be wrong. I think I heard that he was on the circuit, the horror movie convention circuit.
I think I read somewhere that he hasn't even seen this movie or hadn't for like years and years after it came out.
Well, I mean, yeah, my family excluded. You aren't really going to show a movie like this to a kid at 6 years old.
Yeah. So, Jack Torrance arrives at the Overlook Hotel for an interview. He's going in to interview for the caretaker position that takes place from, was it November 1st to May 1st?
May
1st. Because basically the entire hotel shuts down because the snow comes in. They don't have any like ski functions and they don't.
Well, that's a thing that I was thinking about when I was watching it. It's Colorado. You're up in the mountains. There's lots of snow. The fact that they close down when that's like the best time to go.
Yeah.
Would be.
Well, and Jack asks him that. He says, how come you shut down? It would be perfect for skiing. And I think the manager says that the road up there is so windy and twisty that it would cost too much to maintain the road for people to get up there, that it just isn't worth it to keep it open for like skiing and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, today we have better road maintenance and we have better wheel drive vehicles that can get through it.
Yeah.
We have better tires to get through it.
I mean, he was driving a Volkswagen Bug. So,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that ain't making it through anything over 3 inches. So then we meet Danny and we meet Wendy. They're back at home while Jack is at the interview. Danny's friend, Tony, I say friend, his imaginary friend, Tony. So we meet him as well. And then Jack learns from the manager, and as we kind of already briefly touched on this, that the former caretaker, Grady, went cuckoo, ended up killing his family, his two daughters and his wife, and then blew his head off with a shotgun. As we kind of discussed earlier during the Would You Rather, like Nancy said, nobody escaped that situation to kind of tell about it. So the manager actually had to tell Jack.
And it would behoove the people that, and I'm assuming that's, I mean, obviously they found him on May 1st when they came to, or maybe, yeah, maybe they got to him before then, but.
Could you imagine the smell?
Oh, yeah.
4 months of rotting corpse.
Yeah, that would be bad. But it would definitely be an advantage to not make that a public,
or
publicize that.
That's one of those things like that. That's one of those don't ask, don't tell situations. Or like if you ask, you're obligated to tell, but otherwise, you don't have to.
At least that would have been the case back then. Nowadays, if a tragedy occurs somewhere, you get these freaks that go and flock to it.
And they'd be taking pictures. Yeah. And, yeah,
like we do in Gettysburg.
Searching for ghosts. And, yeah. So Danny likes talking to Tony. Tony lives in Danny's mouth, and he's got this like gravelly, like kind of grainy voice. And, you know, he doesn't necessarily tell Danny any bad things. He's just kind of there. So
he's like, not, I wouldn't say like a fortune teller, but he is kind of, shows Danny things that are to come, gives him,
clairvoyant.
Like gives him, yeah. Yeah. He gives him like visions, like,
right.
He gives Danny visions of horrific things that are going to happen.
Right. The Shining.
Yeah.
And to that point, actually, that's the point where we're at. Danny is brushing his teeth and he's looking in the mirror. Tony starts talking to Danny, and that is where we see the elevator of blood for the first time. Just see the doors of the elevator. The blood comes down. It fills up the halls, moving furniture, all sorts of stuff. Apparently, while Danny was brushing his teeth and after he had seen this vision, he passes out. So Wendy has a doctor come to check on Danny. This part I didn't understand. When Danny was brushing his teeth, he had pants on, but while he's laying in bed with the doctor, he has no pants on.
Yeah, I don't know how that could comfort him. Like, if Wendy was like, all right, something happened, you need to calm down, let's take your pants off. I don't see that happening. But it was not the only, like, inconsistency in this movie, as we will get into as we progress through our review. But
yeah, we did pick up a couple.
Yeah. You know what I just thought of? Hmm. They were so progressive making the doctor that came to see Danny a woman, but she was making a house call. They haven't done that since like 50s, 60s. Doctors don't make house calls. Even in 1980, they didn't make house calls. So props to them for making the doctor a woman.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to have to knock them down some points for reality, because nobody's going to go to somebody's apartment to, you know, check about a child. And we don't know if she's a pediatrician. We don't know if she's a psychologist. And she really wouldn't have, unless she is both of those things, she wouldn't have the authority to let Wendy know whether or not Danny's imaginary friend Tony was something to be worried about or something to just kind of go with.
Do you think it was a situation of, because Jack was away at the hotel, they only had the one vehicle and it was a quote unquote emergency? So the doctor was, she could have called an ambulance, but.
Yeah. But I don't think, like in 1981, if a kid passed out, you're going to call 911. You're not going to like find your pediatrician's number and ask if they can come to your house and, you know. Even then, and like she says during when she's talking to the doctor, she said, he seems absolutely fine now.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, now that she's here and he's talking to her, he's absolutely fine. What if he wasn't? What if he had like injured himself? What if something happened that would have made him pass out, like a diabetic coma or, you know, something that they didn't really know a whole lot about at that time. So it would be very irresponsible. To me as a mom, if I saw, my child pass out in front of me and not know what caused it, I would be calling 911.
I mean, yeah.
So what? He's laying there unconscious, and she's like trying to find the doctor's number in her Rolodex or whatever.
Was 911 out in 1980?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know when that started.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to help you on that one.
I think it was it had to have been right around then, but it probably wasn't everywhere. I have no idea. I don't know when it started. So, okay. So at this point, Wendy tells the doctor about Danny's injury. Jack had been drinking and he came home. He was pissed off. He was drunk. And Danny had left all of Jack's papers like strewn across the floor. And whether it doesn't really specify what papers. So we do know from looking it up that Jack used to be a teacher. So there's a very good possibility that it was like, you know, papers he had to grade or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Now, in the movie, Jack wants to be a writer. So there's also the possibility that the papers could have been like, you know, some of his manuscript or whatever.
Yeah.
So Jack had come home. He was pissed off that Danny had spread the papers all over the place. He grabbed Danny, yanked his arm, and pulled his arm out of his socket, dislocated his arm. It was at that point that Jack had decided that he wasn't going to drink anymore. Which brings us to our first point of contention with the inconsistencies. Now, at one point, well, right here, Wendy tells the doctor that Jack had not had a drink in 5 months. A little bit later, Jack says he hasn't had a drink in 5 months. But then immediately after that, he says it's been 3 years since the incident. So that was...
And maybe somebody that read the book could shed some light if they do explain it somehow. That would make sense. Like we're trying to think of different possibilities. Like maybe that Wendy wanted to make it seem like it had just occurred and it wasn't something that she, you know, it was a freak thing that happened and now he decided he wasn't going to drink. That could have been the case.
Yeah.
Because if he had done this to Danny 3 years previous,
mm-hmm.
Then whatever caused him to stop drinking 5 months before the movie takes place would have been a repeat situation.
Right.
So, and then you're talking to the doctor and you're telling the doctor, well, he did this to him 3 years ago. And now five months ago, he did this.
Right.
So it would make sense that Wendy would like not disclose that information.
Okay. I get you. Picking up what you're putting down. She just doesn't want to make Jack look worse than he is.
Right, right. And that's why she kind of downplayed the, well, you know, it's just something happens every day, you know.
Yeah.
Your husband dislocates your son's arm.
Like, yeah. Like, if that happened now, holy crap.
Yeah.
You'd have the cops there. You'd have the CPS there. You'd...
It would be like the part on Ghostbusters when the storm, the clouds are like coming to the building.
The amount of people storming.
Yeah. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Okay, maybe not that part, but.
Okay. Jack ends up getting the job. The whole family loads up their little Volkswagen Bug. And now keep in mind, they're going up there for 5 months. And they got a lot of luggage. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to have a lot of clothes. You got to have toys for Danny. You got to have, you know, apparently a lot of cigarettes. So they go up to, and all of this stuff is loaded into a Volkswagen Bug somehow, some way. Jack is sitting waiting for his tour to start.
Wait, can we address the one thing that you didn't address is the fact that they're in this Volkswagen Bug. Mm-hmm. And they're on these twisty, turny, you know,
the name of the road is the Sidewinder. So if that gives you any example of how the road looks.
And Jack Torrance is the only one wearing a seatbelt in the car. Even the kids even like sitting like hunched up like to talk to his parents. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Volkswagen Bugs only had a driver's side seatbelt. If that's the case, I mean, that would be really stupid because why would you put a passenger seat in there and not put a passenger seatbelt in there?
I would say something about the Germans being inefficient, but that's not true.
Well, maybe it's like an Easter egg where it alludes to the fact that he is so self-centered.
Well, which leads us to, yeah, our next point, which is it could very, okay. So, all right, put a pin in that one. So Jack is waiting to take this tour. And it just so happens that we were looking at it this time, just like literally 2 hours ago, and he's reading a magazine. The manager comes up, Jack puts the magazine down, and we just kind of started looking at it. And we're like,
well, I saw that there was a woman on the front, and I thought maybe it was like a Cosmo or something. It would be strange for, you know, a guy to be sitting there reading a Cosmo.
Yeah. And you said, yeah, that's right. You said, is he reading a woman's magazine? Yeah. And so we started looking at it. We were eyeballing the movie. Turns out he's reading an episode or an edition of Playgirl magazine. So we figured that out. And then, of course, we had to get online. Why is Jack reading an issue of Playgirl?
And he, like, as soon as his new boss comes in to give him the tour, he, like, just sets it down like I'm
casually puts it down like, yeah, like he's reading a novel
with all his their big food mess sitting on the table next to him.
So
he was looking at it with Wendy and Danny sitting there eating.
So we looked it up, and apparently the episode, or what do you call that, the edition, or what is one magazine called in a
issue?
Okay, so in that issue of Playgirl, there was a, and it was a real issue. Apparently in that issue of Playgirl, there was an article about incest within the family. And so we're looking that up, and then now it doesn't, everybody says, okay, Stanley Kubrick is this great, like, very focused director, and everything he does has a reason and a meaning for being in the movie.
And Stephen King is just like that with his writing. He's usually like,
I would think so. But see, we've never read the book.
Right. And so, I'm kind of wondering where the disconnect came, either.
Well,
if it's explained in the book, or if Stanley Kubrick wants to make us figure it out for ourselves.
Stephen King famously hates this movie.
Well, it is unlike any of the other Stephen King movies, like movies that are adaptations of Stephen King novels.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing like it.
So I don't.
Maybe Stanley Kubrick took like artistic liberties that Stephen King kind of felt conflicted with what the points that he was trying to make in the story.
Well, he must have, because he hates this movie. So back to the Playgirl. Like I said, we looked it up, and maybe because of the article that was in there about incest, that along with the physical abuse that Jack had done to Danny, there was also some kind of sexual abuse as well.
We really need to, I'm going to have to read the book because it makes you wonder, and maybe somebody that's listening has read the book, but it makes you wonder if things like the whole Playgirl and what that could symbolically mean or whatever, maybe that's not even in the book.
Well,
maybe that's why Stephen King doesn't like it. It's like, whoa, this is my story, and you're making a little bit too many changes.
Well, that's like, I don't understand. I know he hates it. I'm not sure why.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's out there. And like you said, it could be the fact that it strays too far from his story.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that, you know, like you said, Kubrick took too many artistic liberties and, you know, changed too many things or whatever. I just know he doesn't like it. And yeah, so Jack ends up taking the tour, and this is where we meet Dick Halloran. He takes Wendy on a kitchen tour. Dick calls Danny Doc. Then Dick and Doc go off and start talking about The Shining while they're eating ice cream. One month later, everybody else in the hotel is gone. It's just Wendy, Danny, and Doc. Wait, no. Wendy, Doc, and Jack. Yeah. Wendy, Jack, and Doc. Okay. So 1 month later, everybody else is doing their stuff. Jack is doing his writing, or as much as you can call it that. Doc and Wendy.
We hear the banging away at his typewriter. So at that point, we're just supposed to assume he's working on his novel, and he's getting a whole bunch of work done.
And the way I do like the way it echoes through the whatever, the hall or the big room that they're in, as he's slamming the keys
mm-hmm.
to his typewriter.
If But I was wondering if he was going to use like the scenery from the hotel as his inspiration, as was, I think, what he said.
Did he say, I know he wanted the peace and quiet to be able to work on his, on his story.
I just think that he would be facing the windows and he wasn't.
Maybe he didn't want him with the furniture. I don't know. Because the only time you actually see him looking out the movie, he's got that Gomer Pyle from, he's got that, like, that nasty smirk, or not smirk, but, like, that nasty, like, he's snapped look on his face.
Yeah.
When Wendy and Danny are out doing the,
Well, I know they're not opposed to moving the furniture, because at some point, Wendy moves the electrical cordless console TV.
That was one of your biggest pet peeves.
Where the hell is this TV plugged in?
There could be an outlet in the floor, yeah, but you don't see a cord.
There could be a solar panel connected to it outside.
Yeah, I don't know. So Danny and Wendy go and do the shrub tour, or not the shrub tour, what is it? The hedge.
Yeah, the hedge maze.
The hedge maze outside. Then we come to Danny. He's riding his little big wheel through the halls. You got that cool sound where it goes from like carpet to wood, and then wood to carpet. Mm-hmm. And it's got that cool, like, you know, he's just hauling ass through the halls.
And of course you're thinking, man, how awesome would that have been when I was little?
Shit. Yeah. Like I still have dreams about like riding a bike through an empty mall.
That's I have those too. You know?
I mean, that would just be so awesome. You've got so much room to go. And even if you, you know, wanted to go up a stair or up a floor, you just carry your trike up with you, you know. Yeah. So as he's riding through the halls, he passes room 237. And obviously, Dick Halloran had told him, you know, never go into room 237. That's where the bad shit has happened. Wendy visits Jack while he's writing, and he snaps on her. He's like, Wendy, listen, if I'm in here, whether you hear the typewriter or you don't hear the typewriter, I am working. So do not, under any circumstances, bother me in this room. And this is where you see the first little, like, twinge of Jack's demise, or his, like, cabin fever snapping.
Can we hit rewind just for a second? Because something just occurred to me when we were talking about this big wheel through the halls. Okay, so this is for a kid, it would be utopia.
Oh yeah.
To be able to do that. It's wintertime.
Right.
He's six.
Yep.
He's not having to go to school. He's watching Roadrunner.
Roadrunner, Bugs Bunny.
Watching movies with his mom. He can eat whatever he wants. He's riding the big wheel through the I think that another, I don't know, factor that we're supposed to believe in this movie is the fact that this would be a utopia for any kid.
I would believe so. I would think the only thing that would keep him down would be the fact that he doesn't have another friend to play with.
But didn't Wendy say to the doctor that he doesn't really have a lot of friends?
She may have. I didn't catch it.
And that's around when Tony came.
Oh, right.
He has Tony with him.
yeah.
Tony's just telling him stuff he doesn't want to.
Well, Tony, at this point, Tony's kind of giving him like the side eye, the stink eye.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And I've seen this movie. I know how it ends, but when I was watching it, I was thinking of how funny it would be if it was like a Primal Fear sort of situation where there never was any Danny.
That's another good movie from the 90s. If y'all haven't seen it, Primal Fear. Edward Norton plays a good role in that movie. But yeah.
His voice is naturally like this. Danny's kid voice was fake.
Don't you get it? There never was a Danny.
Kaiser Soze.
Nancy's never seen that whole movie.
I think I've seen so many bits and pieces of the movie that I've kind of done like a patchwork quilt of the plot, and it's been spoofed on Scary Movie. Was it Scary Movie 2?
Or one.
First Scary Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my...
That fucking series has ruined so many good horror movies for us.
And in a good way.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Hey, this is Casey Shearer.
And this is Ray.
Do you like pop culture?
We're pretty sure you do.
Then come on over and check us out at deluxeedition.show.
You will not be sorry. Or maybe you will be. I don't know.
So, okay. Phone lines are down. Doc meets the Grady twins for the first time. Not the first time, but he meets the Grady twins. Go ahead, hon. I know you want to do it.
Fucking freaky ass identical twins. That gives us
a bad name.
A bad name.
Do their line.
Hello, Danny. Come play with us forever and ever and ever.
Okay, so. All right. So he meets the Grady twins while he's riding his hog. And this is where he gets a vision of them being all mutilated and hacked to pieces in the hall. Danny is watching TV with his mom now. He wants to get his fire truck, but Jack is asleep in the room. Doc says, you know, he'll get it. He'll be super quiet. He won't disturb his dad, whatever. Doc goes up to get the fire truck. Jack is sitting up in bed awake instead of sleeping, and he gives Danny a talk.
Says, you can see at this point that he's coming into cabin fever full circle at
yes.
this point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Gives Danny a speech about how he's never going to hurt him or Wendy again. He's over all that, you know, that bad stuff that had happened in the past. He's telling him that he loves him so much. He'd never hurt a hair on his head. And like Nancy said, he's just got like this freaky, it's
creepy,
like, kind of pit of your stomach and look on his face.
With Danny on his lap after, and this time we watched it after him looking at the playgirl, it kind of makes you think.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Was there any like
sexual obviously,
abuse going on?
Yeah. You could tell that Danny was not comfortable.
All right.
And he was not enjoying himself.
The only time that Danny was comfortable with Jack throughout this entire movie was when they were in the car and they were talking about cannibalism.
Right. And then Danny says, that's okay. I learned all about it.
Yeah.
On TV. And then Jack said,
see?
Learned all about it on the television. Yeah. Like condescendingly to Wendy, like, why are you letting him watch this shit?
Jack has a nightmare that he had killed Wendy and Danny and that he cuts them up. Danny comes into the room while Wendy's trying to console Jack, and his clothes are all tore up. He's wearing a sweater. His sweater's all like ripped apart. He's got a little button down shirt on underneath that's torn apart. And he's got like this red, like handprint bruises on his neck where mm-hmm. somebody looks like somebody had tried to strangle him. Mm-hmm. Of course, Wendy jumps right to Danny's defense and says, you know, yelling at Jack, you did this. And he's just got like this look of utter like stupefaction on his face. He's just got his hands up. Like I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Okay. So Danny was obviously in a period of shock.
Yeah.
He wasn't saying anything. Wasn't, you know, responding any kind of questions. And Jack is kind of that same way in that scene.
I never even, yeah.
He doesn't say anything.
Never
occurred. He kind of just makes it look like he didn't do it, but.
He's very subtly shaking his head no. But yeah, he doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. You're right. So Jack goes to the bar. And earlier in the movie, the hotel manager had told Jack and Wendy that, you know, all the booze was removed for the off season to cut down on their insurance costs in case somebody broke in or stole it or whatever. So there's no booze in the bar, but Jack sits down at the bar and he's kind of talking to himself. And then lo and behold, Lloyd, the bartender, appears. The bar is fully stocked behind them. They got, you know, 50 some odd bottles of whiskeys and vodkas and gins and all that
stocked,
kind of stuff.
Fully stocked bar.
So he's talking to Grady and he tells Grady, Lloyd, the bartender. He tells Lloyd, the bartender, about, you know, what happened between Jack and Danny. And this is the point where he says, you know, 5 months, I haven't had a drop to drink in 5 months. Mm-hmm. And then like literally 10 seconds after that, he said, you know, all this happened 3 years ago, which leads us to wonder, like Nancy had said earlier, Is that thunder?
I don't know. Could be. Ooh, yeah.
Thunderstorm. In November.
Jack is demonstrating an increasingly
manic.
He's very, what's the word I'm looking for? Aggressive. He's expressing extreme aggression that's getting progressively worse for Wendy.
Right.
And you can tell that it's just, he's starting to go from how he was, you know, an asshole to her when she came and wanted to ask him. Yeah, yeah. Read a couple of his pages. And then he tells her that he had this dream that he was killing and like he was so upset. But then he's talking to Lloyd, the bartender, and he's like, she's never going to let me forget it.
Until the day I die.
Yeah, yeah. So you can. So the writing's kind of on the wall here. He doesn't love her. He didn't want to be a dad. You kind of get the feeling that he's not pursuing his dream. He's not able at this point, but we don't know that he's not able to write his novel.
Right.
He's failed at being the teacher, which, you know, if you're like, you know, into reading it up about it, whatever, you know this. So it would kind of make sense. And when you put all that stuff together, that he just holds this incredible animosity towards her.
He's extremely resentful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she doesn't work.
It doesn't appear so.
No. And, you know, I don't know. It would be a very weird dynamic just to be in a fly on the wall of their home. Because, I mean, I don't know if they're supposed to. Are we supposed to think that he's actually, like, getting drunk off of this?
I am not sure. And there's a lot of things I'm unsure about in this movie. I think. Okay, so obviously Lloyd. And all the booze, Lloyd obviously is a ghost. The booze, I think, is just like a manifestation of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
In the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily understand. I mean, I don't know how he could get drunk off of ghost booze.
Yeah. Yeah. That's strange.
And maybe he doesn't even have a drink. Maybe he just. He's thinking he's having a drink.
Yeah.
And because his cabin fever is like really kicking in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's having sort of like a placebo kind of, not really drinking, but in his head, he doesn't need the alcohol to feel these things. It's
because he's going cuckoo.
Right.
So I don't know. That would be my guess without reading up on it. But so he's talking to Lloyd. Now, one thing that we noticed, okay, Lloyd is obviously a ghost. Lloyd has a very freaky face.
I noticed that he doesn't really have any eyebrows either. And that's, it wasn't weird that I didn't notice that because I just naturally look at eyebrows.
Okay.
Since I don't have any. And I noticed that Lloyd, that I think that was one of the things that made him look really freaky was the no blinking and the no eyebrows.
I didn't notice the no eyebrows, but
he had like sparse, very sparse.
Okay.
Sparse enough to where from a distance you would think he doesn't have any.
All right. Okay. Well, yeah, that does make people look a little strange.
Yeah.
Like what's her face from the Dragon's Nest or the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Or me. That's why I got him tattooed on.
All right. So Lloyd, he's talking to Lloyd at the bar, and Lloyd is kind of underlit. He's got these really wide eyes, and there's a light coming up from the bar, and he's got these wide eyes. They're like really dark pupils and iris, and we noticed at this point that he never blinks throughout this entire interaction between him and Jack. He never blinks. And this comes up again a little bit later when Jack is talking to Grady in the bathroom after he gets the drink spilled on him from, again, another manifestation of people in the ballroom and at the bar. Grady never blinks throughout this entire interaction. And there's a long shot of Grady giving a speech about how he took out mm-hmm. his wife and then, or took out the girls and then his wife.
But if he was the caretaker, why is he now a butler?
I don't know. Maybe he was like an employee of the hotel as like a butler or a server, whatever, waiter. Mm-hmm. And then in the off season, he stayed on as
That could be.
The caretaker.
That could very well be.
Yeah. Just to, you know, provide, yeah, I don't know, mm-hmm. provide for his family or whatever. Okay, Wendy barges in, into the bar. She tells Jack that there's a woman in the hotel, and that is who strangled Danny. Jack is like, you know, you're fucking nuts.
Yeah, you're out of your fucking mind.
There's nobody else in this hotel. It's just the three of us. Now we meet up with Dick Halloran again. He is in Florida, and he's got one hell of a, I would call it a shag pad, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
He's pimping in that room.
Mm-hmm.
He's got paintings of naked women on the walls with these giant, like, afro haircuts.
Yeah.
And he's laying there in bed. He's watching the news. He's got this, like, Cuban.
And that really kind of takes you for a surprise, because when you meet him at the hotel, you don't see him as that. You picture if he's going to go down to Florida for the winter that he's, like, padding around an old folks.
But yeah, he's got the shagging cabin for sure down there in Florida. He's got a bar in one area of the house, you know. he's set to go. So he's down in Florida, and he gets a vision of Jack in room 237. Now again, room 237 is the bedroom. Jack now goes into room 237. There is a naked woman standing there. She comes out from the tub. She's, you know, fully naked, and they start to embrace, make out, whatever. And as
he's getting into it, because he doesn't like his wife.
So as he's sucking face with this woman, he glances up and he takes a look in the mirror, and you see the back of this woman, and she at some point had turned into this old, like, moldy or
gangrenous,
like rotting, half rotting corpse of a woman. Now, I have to give props to the old lady for getting butt ass naked.
Yeah.
You know, and being done up in that nasty makeup.
Everybody's got their price.
That's true. So, Jack and Wendy have a talking about how Danny, because Danny's like, while Jack is in room 237, Danny's laying in bed and he's like freaking the fuck out. He's like, he's hyperventilating. He's like, he can't talk. He can barely breathe. He's seeing what Jack is doing in room 237. So he knows that there's some shit going down.
And at this point, Tony has pretty much taken over.
There is no Danny. There was only Tony. So Jack comes back up to their room, their little stay room or whatever the hell you call it, their apartment, and you see red rum on the door for the first time. Jack snaps again at Wendy because she expresses that she wants to get Danny out of there and take him to the doctor in town, down the mountain, wherever. Jack throws a fit. He's telling her that, you know, I've let you fuck up so many things in my life, but you're not going to fuck up me writing this novel. And then he storms out. Jack goes back to the bar, and this is where he meets Grady. Grady spills a drink on him. They discuss each other's roles at the hotel, who's doing what. And Grady, they go into this bathroom. I mentioned it the last time we watched it,
very
not this time.
Art Deco.
That red is like...
it's piercing.
It sucks you in.
The red is so red and the white is so white. It's very distracting.
It's
to the scene.
It's like the contrast is.
Even the urinals look just weird.
I just noticed the color. I didn't notice the pisser.
Notice the urinals, because they actually have walls in between.
Right.
And that's where Jack sets his drink.
Well, you don't want to splash on your neighbor's shoes.
Well, why not put it over on the sink? On the counter by the sink.
It would be a little cleaner.
Yeah.
So again, Jack is talking to Grady. Grady is a ghost in the bathroom. And he says his girls didn't like it at the hotel. And as he's giving this speech, again, like we said, he doesn't blink this entire time. I never saw him blink. And it kind of occurred to me at this point that, when he's talking to Lloyd the second time, like he never blinks. And then he goes and he's talking to Grady, who's also a ghost, and Grady never blinks.
Did you notice that Grady has like the old Hollywood accent?
Yes. Yeah, kind of like almost British, but like not.
Like, yeah, fake British, kind of.
Right.
Like Mia Farrow and Rosemary. No, but I had to correct them.
Like, what's that movie? The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they did on House of Wax, the original House of Wax. They did it on
The Aviator.
House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah.
The original one. Yeah. Just that fake Hollywood, old Hollywood vernacular that.
The hoity-toity.
Yeah. Catherine Hepburn, like, had her entire life.
Okay. Grady tells Jack about how his girls didn't like the hotel. And one actually got a book of matches, tried to burn it down. So he corrected her, as Nancy says. His wife didn't like that he had disciplined, in quotes, the daughter. So he corrected the wife as well. And then apparently he ended up pulling a shotgun and blowing his brains out.
And he's basically telling Jack this because he's like, you might have to do this. If this is how they're behaving, you might have to do this. This might be your only only option.
Right, right, right. So Danny has a bad dream at this point. This is where he starts shouting Red Rum as Tony.
In the Miley Cyrus voice.
If y'all haven't, okay, if y'all haven't seen him on Instagram, go onto Instagram, go onto Reels, and just type in Miley Cyrus voice spoof or whatever. You'll know exactly what it is as soon as you see it. So Dick Halloran is trying to call the hotel to check on the Torrances. He can't get a hold because the phone lines are down. He ends up flying to Florida. And he rents a snowcat and he's making his way up to the hotel. Wendy goes into the room. Jack has kind of disappeared. Wendy goes into his writing room or writing hall, whatever. And this is where she finds the All Work and No Play Makes Jack a Dull Boy written over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And apparently, according to the trivia, somebody actually had to write all those pages, and every page in that little stack of his, like, 200 or 300 pages had different...
I believe it.
Yeah. Again, that was Kubrick.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I guess this is the movie
it's
that...
It's his art.
I guess this is the movie that made Olive Oil snap. What's her real name?
Shelley Duvall.
This is the movie that sent her,
If you haven't seen, like, the stories on her from, like, the past few years, poor woman's been, like...
She doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is the movie that started her downward spiral.
Yeah.
So Jack has officially lost it at this point, and he's chasing Wendy around. He says, I'm not going to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you, but you didn't let me finish my sentence. He says, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in. I'm going to destroy your skull. You know, so he's officially gone. He's off the wagon or on the wagon, whichever it is. He's drinking again.
The wagon.
And he's, officially, like, lost his mind. Wendy.
She has a bat in her hand.
I hated the way she swung that bat.
Well, I mean.
Choked up so high. She was holding the bat. She'd end up hitting herself with the handle faster than she would hit Jack in the head.
Well, I mean, I have to take her side on this. If you didn't play baseball or softball, hon, there's a good chance that you don't know the correct way to hold a bat.
But you have probably seen someone hold a bat at some point, even if you hadn't played.
If I'm having my psychotic wants-to-kill-me husband coming after me, I'm not going to think about how a pro baseball player would be holding that bat. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So she ends up hitting Jack over the head, knocks him out. Then she drags him into the storage room. She goes to, when Jack is in the storage room, he tells Wendy, like, listen, hey, you know, you can go and make a phone call if you want to, or, you know, the ham radio or CB, whatever, or you can take the snowcat and you can, you know, try and get out of here. But he warns her, he's already destroyed him. So there is no escape. There is no getting a hold of somebody.
So he's just kind of doing overkill at this point. In his head, he's thinking, he's already going to kill him. So why not just like...
Oh, yeah. He's torture.
Yeah, just torture
even though
them.
Even though he's locked up, he's still like emotionally trying to manipulate them and just fuck with their heads.
Well, at no point in this movie have you really experienced Jack Nicholson's character not being an asshole.
Really, the only time he's not an asshole is when he's talking to Lloyd the bartender or when he's talking to the hotel manager.
Well, and it would be, it would make sense that he's not going to talk that way to the bartender because the bartender's giving him what he wants.
Free booze.
The guy that's running the hotel that gives him the job is giving him the job.
Right.
The only time that Jack in the movie ever expresses any kind of like care for his wife and kid, like genuine, was when he said he had that dream and just like flip a switch and he went from being afraid of a dream where he kills his wife and kid to that being his MO
right
throughout the rest of the movie. So you never really, unless you're like giving him something that he wants, he's just an asshole to you, plain and simple.
Which leads me to a question I'll ask in a little bit. Danny's back up in the room, yelling red rum, red rum, red rum, or red rum, red rum, red rum. So yeah, he's yelling red rum. Jack comes in with the axe, and this is where his famous line is, you know, here's Johnny. And apparently, also in the trivia, that was not the original line, but Jack yelled that line just kind of impromptu. Kubrick, who apparently is not American, had not seen
Johnny Carson.
The Johnny Carson show, so he didn't like that line, but then it ended up working and left in blah, blah, blah. Dick Halloran ends up showing up to the hotel, promptly gets an axe to the chest, which was something that we felt kind of, we didn't like it.
Yeah.
There should have been a little bit more.
Yeah, his character got robbed. He went through all that effort to get to the hotel, and like right when he gets there.
Should have been a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah, at least, I mean, make it look like he's, like, trying to fight or something. He didn't even get that option.
Oh, yeah, Jack surprised him around the corner and just buried the axe in his chest. Now we see a dog, giving head to the butler. A butler? Don't get that at all.
Yeah, Wendy wakes up from a nap and sees that. And
some weird shit.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I'm sure there's some sort of artistic symbolism in this scene. I don't know what it would be. But again, and like you mentioned, this might be something that is connected to the fact that he's reading a Playgirl magazine.
I have no idea. And that's another one of those things. Well, I don't know if that's
furry,
in the book.
The furry has his butt exposed.
I did know.
Yeah. So if he has his butt exposed and he's performing, you know, on a guy.
Yeah.
It would definitely make you, once you're connecting the dots here with the Playgirl, and this is like something that we've never noticed, and I've seen this movie. You didn't like the movie, so we haven't really seen it.
We haven't watched it a lot.
Yeah.
We've watched it more recently in the past 2 weeks than we have in probably 5 years.
Yeah. I watched it before I met you, and I would have never found any of this.
Put two and two together.
When I met you, I was 17, so I'm not gonna be this great movie reviewer.
So Danny ends up getting into the shrub maze, or what the hell is it called? The hedge maze. Hedge maze. Danny ends up getting into the hedge maze. Jack is lost, but Danny isn't. Danny ends up fooling Jack. Jack ends up freezing to death, and then Wendy and Danny escape in the snowcat that Dick Halloran had brought in. We get a quick shot of Jack frozen in the snow with this weird look on his face. Mm-hmm. Another weird look on his face.
Was it not the same look that we said that Vincent D'Onofrio had in Full Metal Jacket?
Well, that was when he was staring out the window.
The evil look?
Yeah. Like kind of looking down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, he does that a lot. Yeah. Well, like you said, Kubrick directed both. Mm. And then we zoom in on this picture of a ballroom full of people. You see Jack right in the very front, and then it zooms in again closer to Jack, and then zooms in again closer to Jack, and then it kind of pans down, and you see 4th of July Hotel Ball, 1921.
What kind of a hotel?
What's going on?
What kind of a hotel, even a big fancy one, has a 4th of July ball?
A big fancy one.
People are going to go to the mountains of Colorado to celebrate 4th of July.
I don't know.
Well, I feel like
there wasn't
Stephen
a lot.
King. I feel like Stephen King wanted to make it a New Year's Eve ball.
I would think because
it was in the
ball.
It was in the winter time, they couldn't do that.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're right. Well, they didn't have a lot on TV in 1921.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't even know. When did TVs come out?
Oh, it was like unveiled at the World's Fair at like 1920 something. I don't know.
Yeah, so there wasn't a lot of entertainment. So a 4th of July ball would probably be the cat's meow.
Yeah. But really, I mean, why not just a 4th of July celebration? I know it's a fancy hotel and everything, but were all like fancy, like were all celebrations back in the roaring 20s a ball?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, think about what was there to do for entertainment in 1921?
Well, they
did
probably
go to like horse races.
Yeah.
But
if you live in the mountains, you could
yodel.
Yeah, I mean, 4th of July, you could go camping. I don't know if they did.
I'm sure people camped. I mean, cowboys camped, and that was like 1880s.
Yeah, that would be a good, I'd like to like learn how they celebrated 4th of July back in
those days. Yeah, honestly, like what would you do in 1921?
You would
especially if you weren't in like the city. I mean, if you were in the city, there would be a lot to do.
But you're going to want to celebrate it with your family, your kids.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. It might be something that's completely plausible that it just doesn't, you know, fit well in today's
viewing.
Yeah.
Pleasure thing.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now my question for you. We did a Q&A a long, long, long time ago.
The question's for me?
For you.
Okay.
Yeah. We did a Q&A a long, long time ago. And I believe it was your sister Joni that asked, who would we compare ourselves to in a movie, or what movie character would we compare ourselves to? Mm-hmm. And you immediately, you didn't even miss a beat after I got done asking the question. You said Jack Torrance, you would compare me to Jack Torrance from The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Does that still hold true?
Not with the recent revelations that we have made with it. It held true back when I said it. But now I feel like...
Wait. And I've never read a Playgirl.
No, that's why I'm saying it felt accurate before we knew these things.
Okay. Okay. So take out the Playgirl.
I don't know. I can't just think of somebody off the top of my head right now that I would replace that with.
But... No, you don't have to replace it. I just wondered if you still thought that way.
No, not in light of these recent revelations.
All right. Okay. All right. What are you going to give this on the gore score?
Gore score? I have to give it, I have to do it pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's people out there that get very squeamish at like just the sight of even fake blood.
Right.
And the blood in the elevator. I know the elevator scene is world renowned for being something that a lot of people like scares the crap out of.
Yeah. Right.
It doesn't scare the crap out of me.
They just used all that Kool-Aid from the storage.
Yeah.
Watered it down.
So as far as gore goes, I got to give it a 2.
Okay. That's fair. Because, totally fair.
Yeah. You're not seeing him actually injure anybody. You're seeing like...
I think the only scene...
You're seeing them with the weapon and then you're seeing them dead. But you're not seeing the actual...
I think...
For Doc...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dick Halloran.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the only...
Dick,
like,
Doc.
Yeah, like I said, Dick and Doc eat ice cream. Okay, and then your overall score.
My overall score for this movie would be an 8.
An 8, okay.
Yeah.
Very fair. I'm with you on both. A 2 for the gore score. There's not a lot of blood. I mean, there's a lot of blood out of the elevator. It doesn't look real. He kills Dick with the axe to the chest. That's really the only death that you see on screen.
And I was kind of, when I see that scene, I'm so distracted at the fact that they're killing him off in that way.
Yeah.
That's, it just robbed that entire character of that scene.
It should have been more like, I don't want to say triumphant, but more like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, we're kind of desensitized to
yeah
that thing. But yeah, that's the only scene that I can remember in the movie that they actually show.
I mean, Wendy cuts his hand when he bashes in the door, but
yeah,
there's really not.
Yeah. You can't really base a gore score on.
Yeah.
Something.
And then, the twins in the hall when they're dead. But that's really it.
Yeah, but they just show the twins alive, and then they show them dead. They don't show them getting hacked up.
Right. So, okay, a 2 and an 8. Yeah, I'm going with a 2 and an 8 as well. 2 on the gore score, 8 overall. Prior to these two watches, I probably would have put it at like a 6.
Mm-hmm.
But we've picked out a ton of different things that kind of adds a little bit more mystique to it.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
I know. I said I want to read the book just to see, you know, what rings true and what doesn't. I never will, but
ideally, or you could listen to the audio book.
Cliff's notes. Ideally, I would read the book and I'd be able to break this down.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, sometimes a mystery is good.
I would also like to know what Jack is doing in the picture from 1921.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So, yeah.
Is he a time traveler? Is he a ghost? Is he, you know, was he reborn? Was this a previous life? We were like...
It remains unanswered.
Yeah.
Sometimes a mystery is good.
Yeah, that's true. Some things we are just not meant to know.
Are there extraterrestrials out there? Okay, yes. We are Extreme Horror Replay. You can find us on Instagram at XHR_podcast. You can find our Patreon at www.patreon.com/XHR podcast. And we also have a TeePublic where you can buy some cool swag if you so choose to. All of that information is available in the link tree, in the bio, on Instagram. That's the easiest way to get to it all. We would like to thank, obviously, Kark as being our first patron, and now Brooke. Brooke, thank you very much for becoming a patron member for our little humble show. We will cover, actually, his movie suggestion next week, and you will all get to hear it, but we're not going to tell you what it is right now. Very good movie, though. I will say that. So, for Extreme Horror Replay, I have been Ben. Hitch your wagon to a star and chase your dreams. And then I will turn it over to Nancy for her to say something.
Why you gotta play me like you do that every single time.
But I changed it up.
Yeah, no, I just don't have anything to say.
Then just say bye, y'all. Right.
We could have discussed this earlier, and you could have given me hitch your wagon to a star. But you stole all that glory for yourself.
We do this at the end of every show.
You never said hitch your.
I stole that one from you from like 2 weeks ago. Because you did it then. Because we were singing the theme song from.
Would you like to swing on a star?
Yeah. Okay. I am Ben. She is Nancy. Be good to one another and stay safe, hon.
No, stay safe. Stay safe. Just
stay,
end it.
Stay safe.
Just say stay safe and end it.
Fine. Stay
you
safe.
You double dipped a chip. You dipped the chip. You took a bite. Then you dipped again. You
dipped again. It's like putting your whole mouth in the bowl. All right. Stay safe and end it.